Talk show recorded live.
All right. Well, if everyone's ready, I'll start the show.
Go for it.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the big show. I am Jeff Gambit, sitting in for Ewan Rankin, who is still broken, but hopefully he'll be able to join us soon. And by soon, I mean in the next few weeks. Ewan, get better. We'd all give you big hugs right now, but I'm afraid that it might actually hurt. So, like, physically hurt. So we'll send you virtual hugs. We have an amazing panel today.
And me.
And Mueller. yeah. I'm already questioning why I said, sure, come on with us. Anyhow, Rich, how are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing great.
It's good to be back.
Yeah. I always look forward to the end of the week because there's the big show today and then the Mac show on Friday. And it's a great way to wrap up a week. Yeah. Patrice, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. It's been an interesting week, to say the least. A lot happening. But yeah, as you said, like end of the week. Like, you know, okay, the big, like today with a big show, you know, it's basically Friday.
Yep. Yep. Pretty much. And Ian, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, sir. Doing great. Getting the end of a busy week. I've had a class I've been teaching remotely all week. So nice. I've just seemed to, all I seem to have done is I've had headphones on for an entire week. And when you get these sort of classes running, sometimes they're good and they're quite interactive. I've had people from Ghana and from the UK and from Europe and some from Austria, in fact, and some from Vienna. But sometimes they all go quiet. It's like radio. There's me sat there and I've got my slides and I'm talking. And join me now on the FM dial. We just make a break now for our sponsors. It's almost like that at times, but it's great. It's good. I'm looking forward to getting back in the classroom.
You did that so well. I'm thinking you should be doing the sponsor bits during the show.
No, no.
Oh, yes. No. Oh, yes. That would be fun.
Yeah. Hawe, it's great to see you back.
Hello, it's great to be back.
Yeah, and I'll give you fair warning. The show runs just the same, even when Ewan's not here. So, you know, it's that just a good roller coaster.
That's good. It's sometimes even what more. I would expect, you know.
Yeah,
it's in good hands.
Yeah, well, we have standards that Ewan has set, and we're doing our best to hit that level and nothing more.
Well, that's good to know.
What standards?
I've been having fun this week because it's been it was International Women's Day on Monday. So that was fun. So I was on a lovely panel chatting about women who build. Awesome. But it's just interesting seeing all the events that have been going on and will continue to go on for the rest of the month. So yeah.
Awesome. And Mueller, this is the first time you've been on when I've been Ewan by proxy. So how are you?
Yeah, it is, yeah. I'm fine, mate. I've had a really busy week doing nothing.
Excellent.
I've been mainly rebuilding my Plex server, and I've learned an awful lot, actually. I've learned things about it now that it's just working a lot better, which I'm quite pleased. I've learned something this week.
Awesome. Well, I'll give everyone fair warning. Technology for me today should be totally fine. The Mac show tomorrow, probably fine, but we'll see, because there's a massive storm that's moving across the United States now. It hit California yesterday, and when it gets to Colorado tomorrow, we're going to have a huge snowstorm. Like, they're expecting 30 inches where I am.
And as we know, infrastructure in the US is not built for weather. So
right.
Is that snow? I'm just asking for a friend.
Yeah.
What's that white stuff?
We will have plenty. And who knows? I may have internet tomorrow. I may have electricity tomorrow. Or I may just be sitting in the cold. We'll see. But actually, I think tomorrow will be fine for the show. And it'll be like in the afternoon when the snow actually starts.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see how good of a forecaster I am.
Yeah, right after the mech show. Like mech show ends and then the second after is like...
Yeah, that's all we really need to do is get to the end of the mech show and we're good.
Yeah, I mean, maybe give it an hour so you can have lunch. That would be nice, right?
That's true. Although I'm prepared to be able to eat without cooking anything for a few days.
That's good.
I don't think it'll be necessary, but you know, I'm ready.
Can you make tea without electricity? That's the question.
As long as you got fire, yes.
I have a camp stove.
Okay, that should do it.
Yeah, if you have fire, well.
You'll be good.
So you're good. Like if you got that, you're good.
Yeah, and I could cook on the camp stove too. You're right.
Mm-hmm. True.
All right, so who has the first story?
Guess that's going to be me.
I guess it's going to be you.
Yeah, I had so many good stories to pick from. I went with something, I want to say almost weird that's happening right now. It's kind of a gold rush that started, I don't know, it feels like a couple days ago, about NFTs, non-fungible, whatever the T stands for. I'm blanking on it. Basically, it's digital assets that you can buy and that are like using blockchain. You can confirm that they are valid, like unique, like that you own them. So like, I don't know. I think someone auctioned off the first ever tweet from Jack.
Actually, Jack did it.
Oh, yeah, he did it. Yeah. So like that's a good example, like the first ever tweet. I mean, it's digital. It's still on Twitter. You can see it and whatever, you can read it. But someone now owns it. And there's other stuff like digital art. Like, I mean, there's a lot of art getting created. It seems to be a gold rush. This story specifically is about a... there was a Christie auction. About what was it, like a, it was an artwork of some sort, I'm blanking on it, but it made it's a art piece by the artist Beeple, and it made $69.3 million.
That's just insane.
That is absolutely insane for digital, like completely digital art. So someone owns something now, or doesn't really, because you can still copy it.
I've been watching the whole NFT thing, and it feels like a scam, really. I know it's not, but it just has that feel about it, or like a pyramid scheme sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, it is built to some extent on trust, because as I said, it's digital, so someone could copy it. You probably couldn't sell it, because then someone could verify that you actually own it and would realize that it's not yours. But let's say technically you can still copy it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely different than whatever, a painting or some other piece of art.
Yeah, and there's nothing to stop you, say, like with Jack's first tweet, going and finding it, taking a screenshot, or copying the URL. I mean, you can still see it.
Yeah. Copying, I mean, you can copy the HTML, or even like go to the database if you have access, like copy the content. Like you can do like a million things to read it. But as I said, there's only one, in air quotes, owner.
As a non-fungible token.
Oh, token. That was the T for you. Yeah.
It does sound like people making stuff up.
Yeah, I mean,
it really does.
It solves one big thing. I mean, there, as I said, there is a lot of art being created in the digital space.
Yeah.
Like the thing that was sold or auctioned off at Christie's, that is pretty unique. And how do you sell something like that?
Yeah.
As I said, like with a standard art piece, like a chair or whatever, like you could sell it, someone can own it, take it home, put it in like whatever, your living room.
Yeah.
How do you do that if it's digital? Well,
but didn't we do that already? Couldn't I still commission an artist to do a digital picture and then give me the Photoshop file?
Yeah,
completely.
But you don't know whether you're the only owner, because he could take the same file and sell it to a million people.
Well, yeah, but that's true of every freelance created piece of media ever in the history of the world until today.
Yeah.
Isn't it? I mean, there are you have legal obligations that prevent people from doing that. Like you can buy the rights to something. You know, if I do a voiceover for something, they can buy the rights in perpetuity to that thing. I could then go and sell that file to other people if I wanted, but I'd be in breach of contract, and there are means to deal with that. And that's true of everything.
Yeah, but so
I don't really understand, unless you want to sell something like a tweet, which is a very abstract thing. I don't understand any of this, basically.
I think that the example you had is slightly different, because in this case, I mean, they commissioned you to do like voiceover work. And I think that's different. If you created like a song, for example, you as an owner could sell it to someone, but you could sell it, as I said, you could sell it to a million people, and there's no way of verifying that. I mean, unless you put it on the web and everybody can see it. But if you gave me, like if you created a song and you sold it to Muller and you sold it to me, there was no way I could verify that you did that, that I'm the only owner. And that's the difference with these NFTs, because they're blockchain based, so they're public, and you can go to the blockchain and see that actually you're the only owner for this.
So basically, there's a signature somewhere that I'm the owner of, which is directly locked on the token, I suppose, which is locked to that piece of digital art that says it's mine.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
I mean, you could like, I mean, there's still some like weird things. Like you could, if it's like a, I don't know, if it's a Photoshop file, you could go in, change it like for five seconds and then sell it again.
Yeah.
Would be totally
King Leon still in their album apparently as an NFT I saw in the article.
Yeah.
Or is that, oh no, that's in the next one down about the Jack selling his tweet.
Mm-hmm.
That is a very abstract idea.
Yeah, the tweet for me, the artwork I was okay with. I mean, it's weird, but I was okay with the tweet. For some reason, I had more of a problem. Like I don't know why, because you could say, well, it's something that someone could own. But for me, it's still different.
That's what made this feel scammy to me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I get the whole benefit of being able to essentially digitally sign or serial number, if you will, a work of art so that you have something that you can use to prove that this is legit. It's the original. It's the only one.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like this. In this case, the NFT is kind of the certificate you would get with an original artwork that says, yes, this is actually what it claims to be. Or with like a watch or something.
Yes, I mean, you can see tangible. Oh, yeah. I mean, if you look at, I mean,
all the people that are now going to be coming up with all sorts of tweets to sell on this platform. Even me, I'm thinking, have I sent anything out? But then I looked the fees. It looks like the fees that you have to pay is something like around $200-$300, and they keep going up. So you probably have to factor that in. But yeah, I can see quite a few people thinking about, I need to craft a tweet when I tweet something out, and maybe I can send it on later.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm sure.
Called OpenSea. I've chucked the link in the chat room. And it's fascinating to look at some of the things you can buy. Characters for games, little emojis, you know, bits of digital art, small 3x3 estate everywhere, some bit of land created on myreality.no.
Wait, you said you emoji? Know.
Yeah.
Buying a little emoji would have no value because if no one else can have the emoji, they won't see it when you use it.
It's true.
It's this sort of thing. I mean, I'm not sure if they're emojis or what. Yeah. There you go. For example.
Yes, there's a band apparently that is selling special perks as NFTs to fans for a new album.
The Kings of Leon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, there are all kinds, like I said, it feels like, I mean, this probably has existed for a little while, but it seems like it popped up like a week or two ago, and all of a sudden it's everywhere. It's one of those things.
That's Kings
of Leon. I'm thinking, like, what have I created that I could, like, the first ever, I don't know, the first ever Mac show I was on? Like, maybe I can sell that.
Yeah, it's end of your first ever 3D flashback show.
Oh, it's true. Yeah, the one with you. Let's sell that one.
That's worth something.
Probably, yeah. The one with Hawa.
Worth even more.
We'd have to talk about that one, Patrice. You know, we have to agree.
I think so too. Yeah.
Kind of, yeah.
Parents' face.
Totally. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm fine with that. If it makes 70 million, I'll split that with you. I'm fine.
That seems fair.
I would say so.
Yeah. Okay. Who has the next story?
I threw one in.
Oh, I see it now.
BBC article, which I'll have to jump back to. It's essentially just interesting that COVID has launched a whole world more of white hat bounty hunters looking for bugs in code. And people are making quite a nice living at it, it would appear. I mean, there's in the article, there's a interesting lady who's a lecturer at Manchester University. And she's made $12,000 in the last 12 months bug hunting. Mm-hmm. You know, that's really interesting. That's really interesting, sort of, and a good use of hackers. And quite a nice way to use the time set at home twiddling your thumbs. If you go, yeah, well, I might have a half an hour, I'll poke around it. If I understand it, I'll poke around at a bit of code. And provide a potentially a useful service. I mean, it does sound great. I mean, as long as it's run for good, of course, and not the other way
around. It is a great service. It's not as easy as you think it is.
Oh, I imagine I wouldn't know where to start. So I'm all right with other people doing it. I'm glad that people can.
I mean, the cool thing is you can actually accidentally discover a bug. Like there has been like kids like have poked around in systems and discovered bugs and gotten bounties. So that has happened and it can happen. Like if you discover something that nobody else has, but if you're serious about it and if it's like your job. There's a lot of skill that you need and that you have to build up first to get into that. Because especially the bigger bounties, you're like, there's a reason why they're this high. Because against some pretty smart people that know a lot about security.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. On the other hand, it's super valuable to have it, as you said.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, I think it's a good thing, a really good thing.
Yeah. And I mean, the reason why those bounties exist is also very interesting. I mean, it's kind of a result of a market being there because like a lot of like black hat hackers or like malware people and like intelligence communities in basically all countries, for them, that's worth a lot of money because I mean, if you're a hacker or something, you can like either like use it to gain access to data and sell that, or I don't know, scam people or whatever. Or if you're a government, I mean, you can spy on people, and that's worth a lot of money to them. Mm. And that's the whole reason why companies are paying for it now, because they, to some extent at least, have to incentivize people not selling it on the black market or selling the information about some vulnerability on the black market or to a government. Mm. Like, I mean, I don't remember the figure, but I know the NSA is spending a not insignificant money amount of money on buying 0 days.
Oh, right.
Every year.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. Companies, they really are in a position now where they have to pay for these exploits because someone else will.
Yep. Yeah. And if you have the option to make, I don't know, a million or two selling it or nothing and giving it to someone, not everybody, I mean, at the end of the day, you have to earn money somehow, and not everybody is willing to, yeah, to do the good thing, to do the nice thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I said, and also, like, it is not, like, it's a day job. Like, it's not something that you can do, like, in the evening for, like, 15 minutes, and you're, like, there, I've listened to a couple of podcasts where hackers explained, like, how they hacked certain systems, and it's super interesting. Like, and it's like days and weeks of work. Like, it's not easy.
Oh no, I can't imagine.
No, I the amount of time it takes to figure out just where to start poking at a service or an application or a piece of hardware. I mean, holy crap.
Yeah. It was, how was that recently? There was a podcast recently that I listened to. But basically, like, it was about, I think it was more from the, like, FBI's perspective, but it was basically how someone hacked. It was one of the big hacks in the last 10 years, where they basically hacked one site and one database and then tried it other places and basically hopped from target to target and until they had access to, like, everything. It's very interesting.
I just found a website called Zerodium, and they were just showing their problem. I mean, I don't know whether it's a real thing or not, but some of their bounties they're paying per submission for a 0 day, depending on what platform and what it is anything up to $2.5 million, $1 million. You know, that's serious money.
Yeah. But I mean, it also tells you the damage it could do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because you think how much they'll have to pay out if something happens. You'd rather pay that money than pay out the big fee. So yeah, I can see why they're paying quite a high amount.
Mm. It's just fascinating. I mean, it's I didn't realize it was quite this organized and almost to the point of, like I say, of there being bounty to gain, you know. It's I really hands off.
And for a lot of people, it is actually, I mean, the word bounty is actually very good, because for them the technical challenge, I mean, the money is great, but the technical challenge is even, like, more interesting. That's why they do it.
The
money allows them to do it,
yeah,
to some extent, but it's a technical challenge to actually find something that makes it interesting.
Oh, God, yes.
Oh, by the way, it was LinkedIn. I found the podcast. Yeah. It's the Darknet Diaries. Like, the 2012 LinkedIn breach that then caused basically secondary breaches everywhere else. That was super interesting.
Awesome. Patrice, if you can come up with the link for that, throw it in the chat, please.
Yep. One second. Since I found the podcast, that's an easy one.
Well, I'm glad that companies and different organizations are seeing the value in having people out there that are finding these bugs and security issues and then paying for them, because this is a real skill, being able to find stuff like this. Yeah.
Yeah, I've dabbled a little bit in security. I mean, usually I'm on the other side, like, securing our systems, but I've dabbled a little bit also in penetration testing, but I'm nowhere good enough to do that professionally. I mean, like, full time, let's put it this way. I've done it professionally for work, but not full time.
Yeah. Okay. And Holly, you have a story in here.
Yeah, I've in Google Meet is introducing a Tarview. And some people might think, does anyone use Google Meet anymore? But I think you'd be surprised how many people still do. Been on a few meetings that do. But the bit I found interesting is they're actually releasing this on iOS first before it's being rolled out to Android. And so I was wondering why it would come out on iOS before they rolled it out on Android. And I don't think that's the first time they've done something like this, where they've rolled something out on iOS before they rolled it out on Android. But as in terms of the functionality, I am glad it is coming, because there is one meeting that I have that is on Google Meet. So it's glad that that view is available. But yeah.
Yeah, my wife's company uses Google video services and everything. So they all use Google Meet. So yeah. I mean, I tend to use Zoom and Teams for the most of the stuff that we do, but
Yeah, same.
That's super interesting. Like, Google would roll out a new feature on iOS first.
Yeah, that's the bit that I was like, why iOS first?
Considering they wrote Android, it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make that much sense, does it?
It doesn't. So I was wondering if anyone might have any insight as to why that could be, what reasons there could be. I don't know.
I can think of a couple.
All your complaints to come on iOS first? I'm not sure.
Maybe Google realized iOS is better.
Oh, let's not get into that.
They know how many people are using their tools, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And they know what platforms they're on. So maybe their data is showing that there's a higher number of people using Google Meet, on iOS than other platforms. Yeah. Therefore, roll it out to the more dominant platform.
That could be. The other option is it could just be a coincidence that it was for internal priority reasons. The iOS team was just faster implementing it. Like, maybe they had more time to spend on it and finished it first. And on Android, there was more other stuff that Google wanted to do first. And so it was prioritized down and simply happened that way. Like, might not even have been intentional. And they're like, okay, let's just roll it out. Like, it doesn't matter. It could also be the opposite of what you said, that the user group is smaller. They said, let's try it with a smaller group, work out all the kinks.
Yeah.
And then roll it out to Android for everybody. So
probably that just Android has got different chipsets, different resolutions. And so there's so many ways they've got to test it. They can just bring it out on iOS and it will scale it easily, and they can just go, there you go, have that, and we'll sort the Android one out later.
Also possible. Yeah.
Could be. Yeah. I mean, it could also be a kind of passive move to help keep government agencies at bay, you know, the different investigations that are going on into monopoly practices.
It's true. Could be like, look, we're doing something on competitors' platform.
Yeah, that's a good one,
point.
Actually. Yeah.
Yeah.
Still weird. All right. And I'm trying to think about the last time I actually used Google Meet.
I used it last week.
I think it was still called Hangouts when I did that.
I'm probably going to use it.
Last time I used it.
Still Hangouts.
It was Hangouts. Last time I used it.
It's the only one I've not used throughout the entire COVID thing. I think
I've paid for it. Yeah, no, I haven't. Yeah, no, no, I agree with you.
Yeah, it's true. Same.
Is it part of G Suite? Is it a free thing?
I think it's part of G Suite because I used it last week on some collaboration thing we were doing, and most of the stuff was Google Docs and all that lot. So yeah, I think.
All right. Yeah, I'm paying for it twice then. Great. It's ever so useful.
Clearly. All right. Next story. Who has something?
I've got one, but tech supports. Have you got yours first?
Here or you go. Want me to do mine? There you go. It's in there.
Which?
Oh.
An Apple story
Apple
on
is changing
Big Show
subscribe
from Rich.
To follow for podcasts.
Wow.
Yeah. So I think I've been saying this since 2006. Thank you. Thank you for changing it from subscribe to follow. Because of course everybody thinks that podcasts cost money. Of course they do. I've not said what the story is, have I? In iOS 14.5, Apple will be changing it in the podcast app so that when you don't subscribe to a podcast anymore, the button says follow on it. It's the same thing. They've just changed the word on the button, but it's so much better now. It's just, this is just so much better. This is one of the most positive things I've seen happen to podcasting in a long time.
Yes.
But what idiots think you have to pay unless you
that's
Spotify
a bit that I don't get.
Especially like, I mean, YouTube, for example, you just subscribe to.
You subscribe on YouTube, so I don't understand why.
It says here in the article, nearly half of people who don't listen to podcasts think it will cost money to subscribe. From Edison's research, Tom Webb, there's another thing here. Here we go. Yeah, there's no one, it's a big thing. I don't know what I'm looking at, but I'm just going to go with that bit in the article that nearly half of people think you have to pay for them.
Yes. No, I've heard the same for YouTube. I can't remember what the thing was. And the guy was saying, said, I met someone, I was talking to him, said, you watch your movies? Oh yeah, I watch them. So if you subscribed, so no one, that costs money, doesn't it? No. And he said he's had this conversation a few times with people and he doesn't understand it. He said, it's all free. I said, I try. And so now I said, I always make a point in my videos of pointing out that it's completely free. Just get yourself signed up. Then you'll see every video I make. Mm. Don't miss out. You know, mm-hmm. And particularly for him, because he's not, it's purely of a demonstrational type stuff. He's it's one of my watch fiddling type stuff where he's taking apart old Rolexes and rebuilding them and things like that. And there isn't any sort of, he might get someone to send something in to fix for him, but generally speaking, it's more a showcase of his talents, if you like. And so it's quite relaxing to watch, you know, someone dealing with these things as small as your pin, you know, putting signs up. But let's get up to one side. The whole thing of people think it costs money to subscribe.
Mm.
So it must be the same with podcasts.
Yeah. The rumor is that this is actually just a prelude to Apple launching a premium podcasting service.
Mm-hmm. It's possible.
I've wished we could sell podcast episodes through the iTunes store for years and years and years as well. Like just to be able to put episodes on, like you can put songs on and that kind of thing would have been amazing back in the day. Yeah. I have mixed feelings about premium podcasting services. Does that just really mean we're paying a lot of money to a lot of famous people to make something just for the sake of making it so that you'll subscribe to this? Because that's
some cases,
basically what it is. I think Spotify do the same thing and that sort of thing. As a podcast listener, I honestly couldn't care less about such things. But that's just me. And I don't know if I'm just still bitter about it or what.
But it's okay to still be bitter about it.
Yeah,
I'm bitter about things. Okay, that's fine. But I don't like it. I don't know why they would do that. What is the benefit to anybody for that existing? And if you're a famous person who can make a podcast that's worth listening to so much that enough people listen to it to put ads on it to make it worth listening to, why don't you just do it yourself? Is it that hard to make a damn podcast, for God's sake?
If you're talking about premium podcasts, I think there's like a segment of podcasts, like, for example, like Macast or like, I don't know, Dalrymple, like those types of people. I wouldn't say those are celebrity podcasts. They're community podcasts and they need like support. They need money. And like so far, the only options for that have been third-party services like Patreon, like PayPal, like whatever, like membership-wise. There's a special service for that.
I don't know. I'm of the mind that people just don't try hard enough. Because I built Simply Everything in... God, when was that? That was how we monetized Simply Syndicated. We had a member area of the website that had content on it for those people. and we ran the whole thing. And I built it out of WordPress plugins. Mm-hmm. And
yeah,
I,
and you
we
can,
were doing
you can do
Patreon
that.
Well before Patreon were doing Patreon for ourselves.
The difference is, I mean, Adam probably could do it. I know VTG, for example, does it as well with Mech Stories. Like, if you have the skills, sure, you can do that, but not everybody does. That's a that is a very limited segment of people. I mean, I don't know, Muller, even like if Muller wanted to do like a podcast, I'm not so sure. I mean, maybe he could figure it out. But
how hard are downloadable WordPress plugins?
Yeah.
But it's still a technique. I mean, podcasting itself is already like to just create a free podcast is a technical hurdle for a lot of people. That's a barrier to entry. Because not everybody has the knowledge or the skills. Yeah. That's why Libsyn and so many other services exist, because they make it easy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, or Squarespace does it pretty easily, for example. Like, there are services out there for exactly those people. And for those people, creating a membership site is difficult. That's why that's 90% of the reason why Patreon exists.
Well, we used to have, you'd have your podcast accounts. What did I use? Was it Spreaker? Yeah, Spreaker. But then your member area would be a completely separate thing. Things like Spreaker and Libsyn and that sort of thing are definitely good, because besides the technical difficulties with it, they're paying a lot less for bandwidth than an individual is.
That's true. They also have the bandwidth optimized for podcasts.
Yeah,
absolutely.
They deal with payments, which are a pain. I mean, there are plugins and everything. You can do your payments, but you still have to deal with it.
Yeah, I think the average user just wants something easy to deal with. Yeah. Someone like us would probably want to create it.
We can just create it ourselves. Yeah. Like, we're skilled like that. But not everybody is. As I said, that's why Patreon exists. I mean, heck, that's probably why PayPal exists, because it made things easier for most people.
But are Apple going to allow end users into that premium system at the end of the day?
Question.
Or are they doing this? Is this going to be like get the podcast edition in your Apple One subscription kind of thing?
Could like the Apple Arcade thing, basically.
I mean, yeah, basically.
Not that this is the Apple show, but anyway, the Mac show. But yeah, I mean, what Spotify is basically doing? I mean, they basically have premium podcasts that they pay for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I expect Apple to do the same.
Mm.
Yeah,
we'll see.
Yeah, still find it very odd.
I'd like to see what
celebrities
these
make
are.
Your own podcasts. Come on, you don't need to do
oh,
it
they do.
Spotify.
There are so many
but they
celebrity
do.
Podcasts
already.
Yeah,
you know.
Just go look at the BBC. The BBC got hundreds of them.
They've got good
ones
as
well. They go with the usually with the either with Spotify or with the existing like bigger media outlets that basically produce it for them, and they all I have to do is show up somewhere, record it. That's it.
And that's why they do it.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you?
And those there's a lot of them that go with places that do ad supported podcasts, don't they? So I mean, a lot of the BBC ones with like footballers and stuff. There's one football one I listen to, and it's all done on I can't remember the name of the company now, but it's ad supported, definitely.
Mm.
I mean, it's free.
That's the problem. Ad supported only works nowadays, at least for if you're big enough. If you're a celebrity, it probably might work. But I mean, I know from like Adam has talked about it on the show, he had to cut back because ads simply don't pay for it anymore.
Mm.
Like, he can't do it full time.
Well, and the whole thing with the way ads work, you know, for tracking the data, every company that sells the ads has a completely different way of tracking the numbers, and for tracking the number of subscribers you have. So you could have two competing ad networks, and they will have completely different numbers for your show.
Yeah.
and it makes it hard for podcasters and also for advertisers, because they're working with numbers that to some degree just feel made up.
Well, look, I have a podcast advertising rant. I'm sorry if this goes on for 10 minutes or so. So some of the biggest problems, we accepted this whole like payment on commission for things. We let advertising turn podcasting into like sales, and previous mediums don't work like that at all. TV channels don't get paid based on how many people buy a BMW car after seeing an ad for it on their channel. They just charge for having that ad on their channel. And podcasters allowed ourselves to go into this sign up at Netflix/British Tech Network, and the two people that do it will get $14 that month. That'll be great. And that was a problem off the bat. And what we didn't realize was just how much old media lie about this stuff in the first place. Mm-hmm. And we could have gotten away with that. And I didn't realize how bad it was until I looked into buying radio ads. And the information that I got from the radio station I was looking to buy ads on consisted, when it told me how many listeners they had, they said, well, our broadcast area covers this area and this many people live in this area, so it could be all of them.
It could be.
What?
Including the children.
Because my podcast's on the internet, and that could be downloaded by every human being on the planet. It could be.
You should be charging more.
I should be charging a lot more for these ads. And we just let that go, and we fell into, well, here's asterisk reporting, and we'll let you know as much detail as you want, advertisers. And we just got absolutely screwed.
Yeah.
And I don't see a way out of it other than to just do YouTube or something else instead.
Which doesn't pay at all nowadays.
Well, yeah.
Almost nothing.
And so I think, yeah, the best way to get your podcast monetized is to have a community around it and sell other things surrounding it. Can you do a book? Can you do an extra video a week? Whatever. I don't know. T-shirts.
Merchandise.
Yeah, merchandise. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So,
coloring books, lunchboxes, all these things.
Lunchboxes.
So, yeah. I'm waiting for merchandise from Patrice and John.
Okay.
Rich.
Yeah, I would have the flashback T-shirt.
I still got a box full of unsold Simply Syndicated T-shirts no one wanted. They were awful.
Yeah. Okay. So, Mueller, you're the only story that's left. Well, except for me, right? And I'm about to break the cardinal rule of the chat room, which is never click any link that Mueller puts in here. And
I didn't see it was a BBC News link. I wouldn't.
Yeah, it was BBC.
Yeah, be trustworthy.
Yeah.
Nonetheless, still from Mueller. Oh, audio cassette tape inventor Lou Ottens dies, age 94. Oh, I made so many mixtapes.
Yeah. I still have them. Yeah, that's right. I just need to find a cassette player.
I've got several. Yeah. There's a couple on top of my wardrobe in the background there. Got loads of kit. Yeah, I mean, let's face it, the cassette wasn't the first tape audio system, but it's the most popular. I mean, if you go through history, there've been all sorts of different systems. Some of them only meant for office use, like the literally a strip of metal that went through machines. And then you got 8-track and all sorts. But I think the cassette was the first one that really hit the big time. And as you said, Jeff, the mixtape, that was something I would do in the early days with the microphone in front of the speaker
on
the radio. And if my mum come in,
sat there waiting.
Your tea's ready.
Yeah, and you're like, mom doesn't get it. And now you have your mom and the mixtape. And yeah.
Yeah. And the DJ would talk over the front and the back of the, you know. So yeah,
prevent you from recording, but yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, I'd gone through all that, and then I learned that you could plug your CD thing into the back of the audio jack at the back, and you could record it without a microphone. And then obviously He actually worked on the audio cassette, developed it, and then his one big regret was not inventing the Walkman, or at least Philips not inventing the Walkman, which actually then revolutionized and probably popularized the cassette, really, because it was the first time you could actually, I mean, when I was 20, the only way to listen to music on the bus or the train to work was with a Walkman, with your cassette eating the batteries to death, you know. You'd end up
with, with your Alba Walkman.
I actually, when I was 24, I had the first portable CD player. It was made by some weird company, and the trouble is, you'd be on the bus and then somebody would knock into you and it would jump, skip back 40 tracks.
Yeah,
you'd had absolutely no control. But that's my I'm showing my age now, but yeah, I think the guy, we've got to doff our caps to this man. He revolutionised music. He probably actually, to be perfectly honest, is responsible for the development of the iPod.
Because
the iPod is actually just the Walkman, only digital. So that's my contribution.
And of course, Spotify and all of the services like it, because the playlist... is a mixtape, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. It's just a modern mixtape.
How many relationships did this man solidify because people could make a playlist?
Yep. And I have fond memories of when my cassette player was almost chewing my tapes, and then me having to take those tapes out and get a pen or a pencil.
And all this is just music. Remember, games used to come on tapes, and you would get a 99 Codemasters game with your pocket money. And because they were so easy to copy, everybody at school had every game. Basically, it just took one kid to get it, and then on a tape to tape recorder, you had Ikari Warriors. There it was.
This will definitely date me. The first computer I used, so this would have been in junior high school, a PET 2001. And it was the upgraded model that had the cassette player built in. So you didn't have to have this extra box off to the side. And I remember the math teacher, because they put it in the math teacher's office because, you know, it's a computer, so math. And he, you know, he said, you need to keep a list of the time marks for each program you have on this tape, so that when you write something new, you don't overwrite part of another program. And when you went to load a program, you know where to fast forward, so you don't have to wait like 20 minutes for the computer to read that much tape to get to your program. Good times.
Jeff, I can actually outdate you. On the computer I used to work on.
Is this the contest who's older?
Yeah.
On the computer I worked on when I was at school, you didn't have audio tape. You had computer punch tape.
Oh my God, you're old. Just...
And we didn't even have floppy disks.
No, they were a fairly modern invention, a floppy disk. Yeah,
I found a zip drive the other day.
You could actually put your little ticker tape in, and it would feed through, load your program, and then you could
My lovely mother-in-law, who's maths degree, did a degree in maths at Cambridge, and is very, very clever. And she tells stories of going with her punch cards down to the computer room to have them fed in to work the problems out for a degree, you know, and that's sort of another world entirely. She's very computer liberate, given that she's in her 70s now. It's fantastic. But yeah, it's and do you not still think how sort of slightly digressing, but how interesting it is that the floppy disk is still the universal symbol to save something, despite most of the generation that are clicking these buttons now probably didn't even use a floppy disk or know what one is.
I've had nieces ask me about the save icon.
Yeah.
You know, why is it a square with another square inside? And I explain where it came from, and they look at me like I slapped him in the face with a fish. And when I showed one of them an actual floppy disk, they were just amazed. And they assumed that I had 3D printed a save button.
Did you tell him it wouldn't even save one photograph on their smartphone?
Yeah. We had at work, and I borrowed it for a weekend to play around with it, a Sony Mavica digital camera.
It took
a 3.5-inch floppy you slotted in the side.
That was great. That was a great camera. Mm.
Was it 320 pixels by 320 pixels?
Yeah, it was something really primitive. But God, that we felt we were on the cutting edge of technology there. Really did. You know, that was heights of technology.
That's just.
I took it to, sorry, carry on.
There will be some pictures from that in my Google Photos. I'll find one.
Oh, God. I do remember the digital camera I bought. I did buy one once, and I took it to work at 1994, and you could take 8 photographs before the memory filled up. Oh. But when you actually took them home and took them off and put in your computer, they were virtually useful.
Magic Man in the chat is saying he won't spend 3 hours writing a game program to cassette, pressed rewind, and then watched it all get chewed up.
Oh, that hurts. And he also pointed out that Mueller's old enough that he worked with the Turing machine. Sure.
Yeah. I was going to say, I was beginning to wonder if he's going to say, yeah, when we're working on the bomb. Yeah.
So what you're saying is I'm the father of computing.
Yep.
You'd like.
I assumed you were the dirty uncle of computing.
Yeah, exactly. That's more like it.
I will make my usual plug whenever I get the opportunity. If you're in the UK, you have the time to get anywhere near Milton Keynes, go to Bletchley Park and go and have a look at the excellent museum there and have a look at the British Museum of Computing, which is slightly shameful. It's in a tin shack at the back of there, but there's still a load of really interesting things in there for the birth of computing. Really, really good.
Mm. The I've Science the Museum in London also there. Has some nice yeah. stuff.
Mm. But go to Bletchley.
I've got computers in there that date back 50 years. I've got a Jupiter. I've got a ZX81 with the memory card thing that used to wobble and then lose all your programs. I remember spending a whole weekend typing in machine code, a program, and then I was about to save it, and I must have moved the little cut box at the back, and it all went stink. Oh, I was crying.
It just hurts.
Yep.
It was 4 pages of 1010 FAB or whatever it was. I can't remember now. But and the thing is, I did put one in once, and I must have made a mistake. And you tried debugging 4,000 lines of machine code. It's not good.
Nope.
No.
It is not.
Nope. Okay, my story is about a company, Verkada, and they do security cameras for that are used in big companies and schools and like police departments and hospitals. And it turns out that pretty much anyone in the company had full access to all the cameras. And
oopsie.
Oh dear.
Yeah. And not even like this was a oops, we didn't know thing. The company knew, but they had a policy where if you shouldn't be looking at the data on people's cameras, then just don't. And yeah.
That's how good a policy is. Yeah.
Yeah. You're not meant to be looking at it, but I can. Yeah. I mean, there was always the thing of I've done IT support for a long time. And when I did desktop support and you go, the worst one was going to see the guys in personnel because inevitably the document that was busted would be the one with everyone's payroll details on it. And then you'd be have to help them fix it while at the same time not read what's on the screen. And that's like the most impossible task.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that and the same thing applies. I mean, my point being the same thing applies here. You're in a position of trust. And you should be trustworthy in that position of trust and not mm-hmm. necessarily be watching the cameras wherever they may be. I mean, I'm not sure whether you're watching court cases or watching the antics in a prison cell or whatever. You know, it's...
Yeah.
Well, we used to have cameras when I used to...
Yeah, go ahead.
We used to have cameras where I used to work, and obviously they covered the members of the public, and there was definitely rules about how you could use them, particularly with surveillance. So if you suspected someone was about to break the law, you could actually do it on the fly, but if you were, say, you knew there was a, say, car crime going in a particular area, and you thought, well, there's about to take place a car crime or some sort of big crime going on, you'd have to get permission to do it, and you'd have to go to a superintendent or above to get permission to do that. You couldn't observe an area to solve a crime without getting some sort of permission to do it. If you happen to come across a crime, that's fine, but you couldn't actually use them to prevent a crime without proving that you'd got some permission and actually followed the law.
Yeah, I think in a lot of companies, I mean, I've worked in this area, like security in company and policies and so on, creating policies like medical data, you can have access to it under which conditions. The reality is any policy is only a piece of paper. If you don't put controls in place, if you don't put like restrict access wherever possible and don't just give people access to it just because they might need it, stuff like that, even if there's a policy in place that says they shouldn't, if you put the tools in place to restrict it, or like in Mueller's case, like where you need to get permission and that needs to be documented and stuff like that before you access. If you don't put that in place, it's gonna be abused. Everybody knows they shouldn't do it, but they will find one reason or another, or accidentally, in quotes, stumble into whatever they should, or think they're doing the right thing because they whatever need it for something. Policies don't work. Policies don't work.
Well, the policies do work if they're connected with security. For instance, like you all like to have a login. So if anyone came in from outside, say if you walked into my office and said, I want to look at the CCTV, you'd need my login. And I wouldn't give you my login. I'd go, I'll sit down with you and go through it with you. But another thing that I don't think members of the public realise is that if a camera was in a residential area, if it came across someone's window, blocks used to come up. And I don't think people realise that literally you couldn't even look in someone's window, and even if you tried, because they put some security in that if it came up to someone's, a member of the public's house, it would put a block across their window. Yep. And I've no idea how you could get rid of that if you wanted to do it, but you couldn't. Mm. So there were protections involved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the thing. You have to put other things in place. Mm-hmm. Just the policy that you cannot look into people's windows doesn't do much, because someone is going to just ignore it or accidentally look at it. But if you put the protections in place, then the policies can work.
Yeah. And in the case of this article, even interns had the super administrator access.
Admin rights. Why would you do that?
Companies like Tesla.
Yeah. But also they kept, you had to submit. So anytime you logged in, apparently you needed to submit a reason for why you logged in. Yeah. So they were gathering that information, but no one was checking it.
Yeah, exactly. That's useless.
So no one went another policy. There's another policy they had, but nobody didn't create a policy. Actually check this periodically, every week, every month, or whatever it is, just do an audit. They didn't do that.
Yeah. Exactly. Like if you can just put in because I wanted to and nobody ever asks you why, then like it's useless.
It's crazy.
I've had this
discussion with my project and my team about real medical data, and it was a tough discussion because there were people that were saying I want every developer to have access to the production database for reasons XYZ. And the argument being, but they're all good people and there's policies in place that they can only do it and all of that. I'm like, but what happens if that person turns out not to be as trustworthy as we thought?
Mm.
Which has happened. Well,
there was an incident when I was working one night and the cameras got left open. So somebody had left their password in. And there was a group of lads all poking around. And obviously, it was a Saturday night. The girls were walking up and down the entertainment areas with their short skirts and whatever. And they were basically looking at the girls. And I was going like, and I walked over and said, "What are you doing, lads?" And they went, "We're just doing." I said, "I think you better go away because that's voyeurism. And if you continue to do it, I'll report you to the senior gaffer." So disappear, never do it there, and never come into this room and use those cameras at my permission. And there were checks because there was people in the room, and the person who left their login, I looked at it and I gave them the biggest roasting they've had in their lives, because the fact is there was girls on the street. I mean, they didn't know they were being looked at, but they were being basically abused. I wasn't very happy about it. I made myself a few enemies that night.
Whenever I hire someone in my team, first day, it's one thing I tell them. If you leave your machine unlocked, the first time you will get a warning from me. The second time, you will find your computer changed. Because I go in and I like turn around the display, change the background picture to a pink cat and whatever. I've done some stuff. Like I know entire teams that had no passwords on their machines because they were not on the corporate the server. And I said, we have potentially access to medical data. I mean, it was a design team, so probably not, but you don't know. That's a no-go. Like the second time, you will pay for it. And the third time, they have to pay dinner for the team.
We've turned screens upside down. We screenshotting the desktop's a great one, and then replace the wallpaper with that.
Done that.
And of course, websites. The homepage is linked to something very, very inappropriate. When they click on it, and that's always really good as well.
Yeah, your Google search will be cat porn, and then you will have to explain to the IT department why.
Yeah, it stops. It stops very quickly after that. A little bit of that kind of abuse, and it fixes it straight away.
We had one. It was back in school. We had one person. There was a shared computer in like the student bodies group, and he always forgot to log out. And like we told him a million times, and we changed the desktop, he didn't get it. And it was a Linux system, so we just put a login script in. Every time he logged in after that, it would send out an email to everybody in the group that he was paying around next time. Every time. Until he figured out how to remove it. Every time he logged in, it would send out that email.
That is awesome.
And we held him up to that. He paid. Like he was like, okay, it's my fault.
If it's Zappy's machine, RM minus.
Yeah, I said it was a shared machine, so we can do that. But we knew who it was, so we were just like, what can we do?
Oh, that's awesome.
I'm a supervisor of the systems at my place. There was one time I saw someone doing something, and I thought, that looks a bit strange. And, of course, I had a login, and I logged in. I looked at their thing, and I saw what they were doing. I thought, that's not to do with the job. And I spoke to my superior and said, I just caught this person doing this and I'm not happy about it. I don't know why. I'm just not happy about it. He says, that's her boyfriend. And I went, how do you know that? He says, well, I just know. They've split up. Basically what she was doing was was checking up on him, seeing where his car was in the city, going across the city. And I was going like, oh, for God's sake. And of course, the crap that happened, the fallout from that was absolutely abysmal, because obviously I had to deal with it. And of course, that made me enemy number one. But the thing is, I mean, she ended up getting the sack, but I was going like, well, why wasn't she in court? I mean, she should have gone to court. She was accessing a national computer for intelligence database and abusing it, but they covered it up because it would look bad. So they just sacked her instead, which I was a bit absolutely annoyed about, because I thought that's not going to teach anyone not to do it.
Yeah.
No.
No.
You know, if she'd have gone to prison or at least been, you know, massively fined or something, it would have gone out amongst everyone. This is what happened.
Yeah, it deter others from doing it. Yeah.
Yep. Hey, on that fun note, this show and all the others on British Tech Network are sponsored by TSO Hosts. Thank you to TSO Hosts for being here, making sure we have the bandwidth and the storage space to bring shows to you every week. And to make sure that there's a place so that when you want to go back and relive your favorite memories from past episodes, you have a way to do that. So big shout out to TSO Hosts. Now, what they're asking of us is to take to our favorite social media and give them a shout out and let them know that you appreciate them for being here to help us out. Of course, if you need domain names or hosting, they're there for you too. But all they're asking of us is give them some social media love. So please do that. Also, IMED Max sponsors us. And they're pretty awesome because they will fix all of your Mac gear unless it's wrapped in fabric. And that's just a Calum issue. And instead of just like ripping out the motherboard and putting a brand new one in, they'll go and look and find out what the actual problem is and replace the components. So you get back the machine that you're expecting to get back, and we have less waste going into landfills, which is absolutely awesome. Cal will be with us tomorrow on the Mac Show, and I'm sure he'll have a machine of the week for us. Also, if you take your gear to IMED Max for any sort of work, mention BTN, you get a 5% discount. And because Ewan still hasn't stopped me, I'm telling everyone, sign up for the contest to win an IMED Max mug or an IMED Max Qi charger. And to enter the contest, what you have to do is find the names of all four people that work at IMED Max. And I already got you 25% of the way there because I mentioned Calum. Now you just need to find three more names and send those in an email to BritishTechNetwork@gmail.com. Did I get it right, Patrice?
Right.
2 weeks in a row, I've gotten it right. Send an email there. And then when Ewan finally tells me to stop talking about this, he'll pull names out randomly, and those people are going to win the cool IMED Max gear. So thank you to TSO Hosts, and thank you to IMED Max for being here for us. It's awesome for me to be able to get to hang out with so many cool people and to know that we have companies out there that have our back so we can keep coming to you every week. All right. So now on to the thing.
But before you do that, can I big up IBM Max myself?
Yes. Sure.
Well, they've done my Mac Mini, which I think a few weeks ago I was moaning about, and they put an SSD in there, and it was done for an amazing price, and the damn thing flies now. It's like an M1. It's absolutely boots up in seconds. So I would say if you've got a 2014 or this one was 2015, but same model, take it to IMED Max, get an SSD, give it to them, and you'll have a Mac Mini that will actually be useful.
Awesome. All right. And now on to the cool thing. Rich, do you have something?
I do. I have a little thing. It's just a quick one. I've talked about Xbox Game Pass before. I think I might have mentioned the news of Microsoft buying Bethesda Games. And this week, all of that has been finalized legally now. They definitely own Bethesda Games. And so they've announced that 20 new Bethesda games are coming to Xbox. I can't speak anymore. Xbox Game Pass as of tomorrow. And it's actually quite a good list of Dishonored and Doom and Elder Scrolls and Fallout and Wolfenstein. And so it's another reason to check out Game Pass and play those awesome games.
Do that now.
Lose 3 months of your life to Skyrim. Go on, it's fun. Kill some dragons.
To be fair, we're still in a place in the world where losing 3 months isn't a bad thing.
Exactly.
Sign up and play.
And if you do it playing Fallout 4, you're sort of prepared for what's going on out there. So
true.
So Fallout 4's involved. You're saying Fallout 4's in there?
Oh, yeah, Fallout 4, available on console, PC, and cloud. Fallout 76 and Fallout New Vegas. $7.99 a month. There you go.
Well, we know what Mueller's doing with the rest of his week.
Sorry.
I've got the dooms, but...
Okay, I'm going to pick another show since I'm on the roll like for the last month just picking shows. There's a good reason why I'm picking this one. Not only is it one of my favorite shows, as I just proved in the chat, if you looked at the device and machine names I'm using, but also because it has been remastered and re-released. And it's Babylon 5. If you have never heard of it, it is amazing. It's a science fiction show. It is basically, if you know Deep Space Nine, Babylon 5 was pitched to Paramount. They declined as a show. They declined it and then made Deep Space Nine, which is a carbon copy of it. Babylon 5 has less of a budget, way less of a budget, as you can tell. You can tell.
He's just trying to wind me up. I mean, come on.
But it is so much as a show. I mean, not saying Deep Space Nine is bad. Like, Deep Space Nine is a great show. Like, I really enjoy it. I like Star Trek.
Yeah.
But Babylon 5 is, for the little budget that they have, an amazing show. I mean, the CGI, they've remastered it now. It's better, but the CGI is really bad. Like, in a lot of places, really bad. But it has some, it has charm. They have actual aliens that look alien. It's not just the forehead of the week, which is kind of what Star Trek has done for budget reasons. Like, I mean, there were good reasons to do it. But Babylon 5, actually, the costumes weren't great. Like, let's face it, they were kind of bad a lot of times. But I actually tried. But what I really liked about Babylon 5 is that the people, the stories, like just the cast, it's just a great show. I cry every time at the end. Like, it is just great. So if you have time, as I said, available to buy internationally for streaming on HBO Max, Babylon 5, great show. One of absolutely my favorites.
It's on my Plex server.
I have a confession, Patrice.
It was on for 5 seasons.
I only partway through season one.
Okay.
Like, I never watched it.
And season one isn't even the greatest. Like, it's kind of like Star Trek. The first season is great. It gets really much better later.
Well, that's why I haven't made it through season one yet, because it's kind of hard to get through. It's like season one of Deep Space Nine.
Yeah,
it was so bad that they shouldn't have renewed the show. I'm glad they did, because it got really good. Mm-hmm. But that first season was so bad.
Yeah, absolutely. But the story, I haven't even talked about the story. The story is exactly the same as Deep Space Nine. Like, it's a space station somewhere that has a number. It has a lot of aliens, like different races coming together for mostly peaceful reasons. And stuff happens. It's kind of the premise of Deep Space Nine. There's a big war. Like, you will see the parallels. Like, if you watch it, you will see the parallels. There's a big war and everything.
The
shadows
that they get to jump through so that people can come from far away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yep. There's a wormhole or something like that. As I said, there's so many parallels. But as I said, what I really liked is the cast. I mean, there is like Peter Jurassic as Londo Mollari is like a great performance. There's so many, like all the characters are really, really good. And as I said, yeah. I'm happy that it was made and that they made it despite like not having a budget, basically. And there's a loyal fan base of Babylon 5.
Oh, yeah, Babylon 5 was ace.
Yeah.
I still remember Bruce Boxleitner from Bring Him Back Alive, which was a knockoff of Indiana Jones they did in the 80s. I think it was the 80s.
It might have been, yeah.
I must have to find out now.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, Boxleitner actually comes in later, like at the beginning, he's not there. Yeah, but as I said, they're like Andreas Katsoulis as Chikar, Stephen First as Ryokoto. Like, there's so many good, like good and not so well known actors in there. As I said, you can simply tell, like, especially as I said, look at this, the CGI shots, like the space station from the outside, and you will know, like, and they reuse that like a gazillion times. Like sometimes they would just flip it and play it backwards and pretend it's a different shot, stuff like that. They really had to stretch the budget to save as much as possible for where it mattered.
It was all the early special video effects toasted
do look like
stuff.
Video game.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was early 90s, so like barely CGI.
It's done on the Amiga.
Oh, yeah. The Amiga toaster.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, and the video toaster.
That was such a cool machine.
I had an Amiga. That was brilliant. Loved it.
Deep Space Nine, of course, used ILM. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they had definitely better technology available as well. Better money and better technology. Yeah, but as I said, like, what I liked is that the aliens. Like, I mean, Deep Space Nine has aliens, but they're all similar-ish. In Babylon 5, you have similar ish. Like they're all like they're all two eyes, two feet, two arms, mostly. Like in Deep Space Nine, you have
corporeal beings that live in the wormhole and other.
Well, okay, you have that. That's true. Yeah, but it's like Babylon 5 has like they have sectors for people that don't breathe air, for example, stuff like that. They have. I mean, later on, non corporeal beings. They have like different, as I said, for that they had no budget basically. It's actually surprising what they did. They could have saved probably a lot of money if they hadn't done that. So yeah.
All right. I'll get back into Babylon 5. I'll do my best to power through season 1 so that I can get to the good stuff. All right, Ian, what do you have?
I think I've stuck a link in the chat room, the Sonos Roam. Brand new. They've just released a new portable. Same Sonos technology, same great stuff. It's portable, waterproof, Bluetooth, Wi-Fi. Sounds great. I mean, we're big fans of Sonos here. We've got 3 or 4 of the damn things all dotted around the house. And I think my wife's itching to pick one of these up now. But it looks great. I mean, particularly when the world fixes itself again, you can go on holiday. What an ideal thing to throw in your bag to take with you.
I'm on the beach listening to my Roam.
It's waterproof. IP6 rated. Why not?
It's waterproof.
And it's
buy some headphones, you selfish sod.
159 pounds.
Yeah, I don't know what that is in American dollars, maybe 10 grand, something like that.
Probably.
Yeah, it's not super expensive either.
Not for what it is, considering the tech, it's not super expensive either for a great bit of kit. Yeah, they sent us an email saying we can get one. I think there's a, if you're a customer already, you can get a slightly cheaper deal on the pre-order. Not by masses, but you can get a little bit off.
Bad.
I can't get it to... switch over to US. Hey, 179 euro. All right. That's very cool.
So you got pounds and euros, but dollars.
I can't get it to show me dollars.
It died in for dollars.
Yeah. I think it was 159 if I remember correctly.
So. United States, click a button. It's $169.
$169, right. Okay.
Yeah. That's funny. It hit the bottom, will not hit... show me anything US Jeff. Right now. Okay, whatever.
It's like, come to Europe.
Well, I mean, there are some valid reasons why I might want to be in Europe.
Yeah.
All right. Oh, wait, what do you have?
I've been playing around with stars from Chrome. Just because we had the Mars landing and all of that, just went looking around.
This is cool.
Yeah, it is. Takes you on the journey.
Oh, stop playing me news. Oh, that's really nice.
Yeah. You can take the tour and just come out. Zoom back in.
Maybe we should explain what it is. What are the people listening?
We're all in trance just looking at this. And it's going to look wonderful when I actually go full screen on my display.
So it's a 3D visualization of all the stars that are nearby us. And it's created by Google. So I think I haven't actually tried it in a Chrome browser. It might actually work better. Thinking about it.
But it works. It was created for Chrome.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's been fine. I've been using it on Firefox and it's fine. So, but
it's working great here on Edge. So yeah.
But it's an interactive 3D visualization of stellar neighborhood of stars.
Every 200 million years.
To be honest,
click on a star and it'll just take you there.
It'll take you there. Yeah.
To be honest, I would not put it past the people who created this to have hidden like whatever Deep Space Nine and Babylon 5 as Easter eggs somewhere.
Yeah, probably. It's trying to find them, isn't it? Yeah, could do a whole 360. I just like the fact that I can.
Well, there are Federation star maps out there. So you should be able to figure out what stars to get near to find these streaks.
It does tell you how far away the nearest man-made object, the farthest away man-made object is, which is 17 light hours. Mm-hmm. Which is Voyager.
Not much.
Yeah.
It's basically nothing.
Mm. Oh, this is so very
basically nothing and still far away.
Yeah. Oh my God.
There's a million stars. It's 100 million light years side to side. The Monty Python song still taught me all I know about the universe and how big it is.
It's been changed.
It has been changed to make it more accurate.
Yeah.
They consulted with Idle as well. They consulted with Idle as well, didn't they?
Mm hmm.
Which I think is excellent.
They consulted with that physicist.
Brian Cox.
On the monkey cage. Brian Cox. Because he had a go at him.
They've had Eric Idle on there a few times. On monkey cage.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And the guy from Queen. Brian May.
Yeah, Brian May's got a degree in astrophysics. There's no surprises there.
Right. Oh, my God. This is so cool. I think the rest of my day is ruined.
I'm browsing stars as we talk. I'm browsing stars as we speak.
Yeah. I'm zooming into the solar system and out. Like,
yeah, and now
that is alone.
Zooming in and out, and I just enjoy it, and then just turning it around because you can go 360 views, so it's moving all the way around. Yeah.
Oh, I just found the Cardassians.
This would be a good time to let people know where they can find the links to all of our cool things and all the articles we talked about. And Patrice, once again, I'm going to rely on you since I still can't remember the right link.
Okay. That is very simple. Take your browser of choice, point it to the star system at britishtechnetwork.com/chat and then navigate to star date. Let's make it all about that.
Yeah.
Star date, I don't know, I can't convert it, but it's March, what is today? 11th, 2021? 11th. Yep. Yeah, March 11th, 2021.
Unless you're in Australia.
True, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's star date 2021.04.11.
Something like that. And yeah, you will find all the links. And as always, don't click on any links that Mueller Bike had posted.
Right. And speaking of Mueller, what's your cool thing?
I put it in the chat already. Mm-hmm. It's a BBC Sounds podcast. It's, as you probably know, I've got a bit of an interest in history. And it's a history podcast that will be particularly useful probably for parents who have got children at the moment. They need to homeschool. There are two versions of it. There's the no swearing version, which is the friendly children version. And there's the version which doesn't have a lot of swearing, to be honest, but it's a bit more, shall we say, true to the history. For instance, there was James II of England, who was James VI of Scotland. I didn't know this until I listened to this. He was actually probably homosexual. And I actually found it absolutely fascinating listening to his history going like, I did not know that. No one taught me that at school. And I learned an awful lot about James II of England, James VI of Scotland, on this podcast. So go back, listen to it, and you'll learn an awful lot of absolutely fantastic stuff.
Very cool.
By the way, thanks, Ian, for putting this link in. There's a star date calculator. It's funny. One, it's a German website. Two, last updated 2004. And yes, like it has all the things. Like it says, Netscape browser needs some time to prepare the formula. And it has a webmaster page with a contact form.
Mm-hmm. I found another amazing one that's slightly nicer. I found a slightly nicer one, but I thought that was great because it was.
I think this is amazing. This is perfect.
It's first hand.
The start date is -301808. Yeah. And then 0.488584474. So for the future, that's where we are.
So does the star date start at zero when we got warp or something? I don't know.
I don't remember. Start January 1st, 2020.
Here's another really bad page to read. There's a guide on how you work out star dates.
All right,
and that's easily been done on an old web browser.
Coming out. Stardate doesn't start until some point after Earth gains Warp 5 technology. Mm. And the reason I know that is because in Star Trek Enterprise, that's the first Warp 5 capable ship from Earth. And they do all of their log entries in the current calendar.
It's true. Yeah, I remember that.
I suppose they'd need a different kind of star date because if you're traveling at the speed of light, time changes.
Yeah, but they're not really traveling at the speed of light.
Yeah, it's relative.
They're warping time space around them, so they don't have a time dilation effect. The only time they would have time dilation is if they use their impulse drive, and that can go just under light speed. And since they're moving through regular time space, then you'd have time dilation.
Yeah. Time is relative. You should know that.
And it's a wonder I've ever been able to.
Like, we know what we're talking about.
I guess the Trek one gives a completely different star date.
And then another one. The Trek guide one does another. The Trek one's got all justification for the calculations as well if you look further down.
Yeah.
And that takes some proper nerdiness.
Yeah, that's
for sure.
That takes the kind of nerdiness that suggests that you've never had a girlfriend, and you wouldn't know your way around. You wouldn't know your way around a girlfriend or a boyfriend if you ever got one. There's some proper nerdiness going on there for that math. Really proper nerdiness.
You know, I'm feeling bad because I didn't bring anything Star Trek this week.
Yeah, it's true.
All right, so we've gotten through everyone's cool thing except mine, right?
Yeah.
All right, so then mine is actually a little bit of nostalgia for me. And it's a book called The Phantom Tollbooth by Norton Jester. And it's a really fun book that's written for kids, you know, like in right around that just preteen age. But it's still a good story that holds up. And, you know, it's about this kid that ends up getting to like jump to other realities or other worlds. And he gets her through this phantom toll booth. And it's just a really fun story. And the reason it's my pick this week is because Norton Jester passed away a few days ago. So it brought the book back to mind for me. And absolutely love it. And there you go. So an easy read for adults and a super fun read for kids. All right. Well, wow, we made it through another show without going completely off the rails. Okay. Well, completely off the rails is a relative term. So go us.
That's what people come here for.
Yeah, that's true. And they come back week after week. And Ewan keeps having us on week after week.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, Rich, where can people find you?
People can find me at earlymorningbarking.com. I think that's the easiest place.
Awesome. And Patrice, how about you?
You can find me every week here on the Big Show and tomorrow on the Mac Show every Friday as well. You can find everything I'm doing, all the social media links, everything, my buy me a coffee link and everything at thepatrice.com. And we already talked about Foodie Flashback. That's my podcast. I hope I get to edit the next episode this weekend. That would be great. So foodieflashback.com, that's where you can listen to that.
Awesome. All right, Ian, where are you?
I'm here, usual place. I'm on the Big Show mostly. You can find me in our Slack room on Slack. If you look there, I'm occasionally pop up and abuse Miller and he abuses me. And otherwise, I'll be somewhere teaching someone else to use Commvault. And you can find me on LinkedIn as Ian Graner.
Cool. Howie, where are you?
I'm on Twitter as Howie A. You can also find me in the Slack room and on the Big Show as well, when I do come.
And it's always awesome when you do.
Thank you.
All right, Muller, where can people find you?
I'm in the Slack room. I'm on Twitter as Muller Biker. And I'm going to going Bigfoot hunting somewhere in Canada. And I think I'll see Ian Grant there.
All right. And I'm Jay Gamut on Twitter and Instagram here on the Big Show, Fridays on the Mac Show, pretty regularly, Tuesday nights on Mac Voices Live and a bunch of other shows. I kind of get around. Thanks to all of you for making this just so easy for me. Yet again, basically, all I had to do was show up and occasionally go, oh, and all of you did the rest. So thank you to all of you. And thank you to everyone that's watching live, everyone that tunes in later to watch the video recording or listen to the audio version. Every one of you rocks. You're absolutely awesome. And so glad you're all here. Also, thanks again to TSO Hosts and I'm in Max for sponsoring us and making sure we can be here every week. They rock too. Thanks. We'll see everyone again tomorrow for the Max Show, right? Everyone come back. And we'll see you again next week on the Big Show and the Max Show. And one of these days, Ewan will be able to come and join us again. And I will gladly hand the reins back to him because while we're able to get by without him here, it's just not the same. So Ewan, get better. And we're looking forward to seeing you again soon. And thanks again to everyone for being here. And see you next week. And we have a show.
We do. Yay.